Good morning. Thank you guys all for coming. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Tyler. I'm a first year here. And this morning we have the great pleasure of hearing from a person who I'm very honored to be good friends with for a little over 2 years now. Some of you may have heard his story last night. He grew up as a child slave in Haiti, and he's here to share about his story there, as well as how he got to be where he is today and doing the work that he's doing in Haiti now. So if you'll please join me in warmly welcoming Jean-Robert Cadet.
Good morning. Everybody's awake? This is my second time coming here to Harrisonburg. Beautiful town, and I'm just surprised at the weather. When I landed on the 2 days ago, I got at the airport. And for a split second, I thought I was in the wrong place. I said, I caught the wrong flight. And I look around, I said, this looks familiar. And I was very surprised at the weather. And especially yesterday, it was warm. I just couldn't believe it. I bought a coat. I was ready. And I have not been able to wear my coat. And when I came last year, my coat was very useful. And now I don't need it. I am from Haiti. I was born there. It's a place where the poverty is unbelievable. It's grinding poverty. Although most people there are illiterate, they know the importance of education. I've seen mothers go without food to buy books, school uniform, and to pay for their children's tuition. Since most schools are privately owned, some desperate families in abject poverty have been giving their children to strangers who promise them an education in exchange for domestic labor. Sadly, these promises are rarely kept. That exchange, which has been going on for the past 200 years, is the root cause of child slavery in Haiti today. This is a child slave in front of you. And this is a child basically owned by a family in Port-au-Prince, and a little boy who gets up at 5 in the morning, the first to rise and the last one to go to sleep. And that's part of his job, to carry the owner's child to school on his back. Then in the afternoon, he has to go back to the school to pick up that child on his back. If the child does not want to walk, he has to carry him. And if he doesn't carry him, he's going to be punished for that. And that's that picture, when I saw this last year, I had to take a picture of it because that's what I used to do as a child, walking or carrying other children to school. I was in Haiti the day of the earthquake, the day after the earthquake in January 2010. And I find myself asking dozens of people where they were and what they're doing when this earthquake happened. Basically, I was working as a reporter, as a contributing reporter for CNN and other news organizations. Most said that they had previously never heard of earthquakes. Some thought it was a bad voodoo god that had invaded their homes. Some people had run out into the street, had run from the street into buildings which collapsed on them. A policeman told me that he ran out of the police station with his gun drawn because he thought Haiti was under attack. A 10-year-old boy said, the devil made the houses fall. These interviews dramatically show that Haiti, where the illiteracy rate is about 60%, is in serious need of mandatory education. Child slavery and illiteracy are destroying Haiti's future and limiting its potential for development and growth. Slave children usually grow up to be illiterate adults who sometimes don't value other people's lives because their own lives were never valued. They are giving nothing of value, and they have little or nothing to give back in the context of society. I was probably the first child trafficked in the United States from Haiti in the early 70s. I was perhaps 15 years old. I never knew my age for sure. My owners had acquired me after my mother died. I was perhaps 4 years old. Throughout my childhood in Haiti, I never dreamt of becoming anything because I worried constantly about my physical safety, as does every child in my situation. In the US, I was enrolled in a high school only after my owners had found out it was against the law to keep a child under the age of 18 out of school. I was placed in the 10th grade and had only the equivalent of a second grade education. And I didn't speak English. Before long, my owners threw me out into the street because I was no longer needed. To them, I was a disposable commodity, something of no value. A teacher helped me get into the welfare system and tutored me during his office hours. I remember one early afternoon in February, almost 2 years after arriving in the United States from Haiti, I find myself walking into a strange situation in the lunchroom of my new American high school. Some new thing had intruded upon the chaotic atmosphere that day. A speech was coming over the PA system. Even to my ears, still new to the language, this was a very, very powerful speech. Until that day, I had heard nothing but school announcement coming over those loudspeakers, announcement that were pretty much ignored by the lunch crowd. I felt myself drawn into the eloquent ebb and flow of this moving speech. The orator's cadences, his melodious voice, and his passionate delivery mesmerized me. My English had improved to the point where I could make out most of the words I was hearing. Most of the lunch crowd seemed genuinely captivated by this man's powerful oratory. At one point near the end, the man repeated the refrain, "I have a dream. I have a dream," over and over. I had no idea what he was saying. This was very, very confusing to me because I kept asking myself, why is he speaking about a dream he's having now? He should be saying, "I had a dream last night," and tell us what the dream was about. After lunch, I went to my history class, and I said to Mr. Rabinowitz, my history teacher, "This man cannot speak English very well because he was saying, I have a dream while he was speaking. People don't fall asleep and dream while they were speaking and dream and at the same time. I said, it's impossible. Can someone do that?" And he laughed. He said, "Jean, this is a great man, Martin Luther King. He was assassinated." And I said, "Well, why do they play his speech?" And he says, "This is Black History Month." And I said, "Oh, okay." I said, "I hope April is Blue History Month because blue is my favorite color." And he laughed again and he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "You have a color for each subject?"
And he laughed again. He says, no, Black History Month. Black means Black African American, Black people. And it's their history, it's History Month. I didn't want to go there because I just couldn't understand what he was talking about. When Martin Luther King gave that speech, he was looking at an historical and ongoing nightmare, and he was choosing to dream in daylight. I have a dream, he told us. Well, 35 years ago, I didn't understand that to dream the way King was dreaming meant to actively look toward the future, a better future for his country, for all people, for the human race. After high school, I joined the U.S. military and became a U.S. citizen. And it was the first time in my life I actually had a citizenship. I was citizen of a country, because children like us, we're not registered, we're not even recognized by the government. And my beautifully written in calligraphy certificate, it says U.S., United States citizen. And I was beaming with pride. With the GI Bill, I attended the University of South Florida, and I became a teacher, only because teachers had made a difference in my life. I got married and had a son. His name is Adam. My wife named him. She wouldn't let me name him for various reasons. I will tell you afterward. He is 19 now, and he's still a work in progress. Adam was 66 years old when he asked me, Dad, where are your grandma and grandpa on my side of the family? I felt so ashamed of my past that I had not shared it with my wife. And I couldn't answer that simple question from a six-year-old boy. And this little boy was my son. And I thought, how do I keep a secret to keep my past from my son? I had managed to keep it from my wife, but we're talking about my son. Well, after I put him to bed that night, I began to write a letter to him in very simple words that that 6-year-old children could understand. And I wanted to tell him about how Daddy spent his childhood. The letter became an autobiography. I spent, I would say, a year and a half writing that story that I couldn't end. If you ever heard of the never-ending story, well, that's how I felt. I couldn't find a way to finish this letter to my son. And every time I finish writing a notebook, or a page, or I had to hide it. I would lock it in a cupboard under lock and key, because I was still afraid of telling somebody, of revealing to my wife. Because what woman wants to be married to a man who was a former child slave? I mean, that was my thinking, but it was not her thinking. The letter became my autobiography, and today it is the voice of Haiti's children in modern slavery. And I owe my success to the educational opportunities that made the United States of America one of the greatest nations on earth. Now, as I stand before you at this very moment, I have a dream. Like King's dream, it is a powerful dream, but one that reminds me of all those hundreds of thousands of children in my native country who are Haiti's future, but live each day without the tiniest stone of hope. Little boys and little girls in modern day slavery, wherever they are, don't dream because they're illiterate and their minds are too busy worrying about their safety and survival. Now I dream for all of them. I dream that one day Haiti will rise from the scourge of child slavery into a sunlit dawn where all children have a chance to reach for the golden ring of happiness as I did. I dream that one day Haiti will make education a mandated gift to all children. I dream that one day soon, Haiti's children will no longer be robbed of their selfhood, their self-confidence, their self-esteem, and their right to self-expression, and that they will no longer be robbed of their selfhood. I dream this because people like you, who value education, have nurtured this generation's dream. And you, my friend, sitting here, students, what are your dreams for your future, for your families, your communities, and the human race? Will you reach across the border of this prosperous nation to empower families in abject poverty so they can feed themselves and educate their children? I challenge you to become citizens of our diverse world who take ownership of a problem that keeps others from reaching their own dream. Thank you very much. I would like to, you may applaud if you want. Thank you. Thank you. Because you went like, you're waiting. And I sat there a little while ago, I was listening, I can't sing, and I was kind of moving my lips to the song. It was a beautiful song. And after you finished singing the song, I went like this. I'm looking, who's gonna start the applaud? But nobody did. I almost applauded, and you did a beautiful job. But I wanted to finish showing you some of the situation that's going on in Haiti with its children, its future. This is a picture of a little girl. You can see she's walking her owner's child to school. I know this girl. She's wearing a used blouse that her owner gave her. And she gets up at 5 in the morning to go fetch water, to give this child a bath, to get her to comb her hair, get her dressed, and walk her to school. But her, she can't go because she's a slave. And this picture was taken before the earthquake. This is another one, carrying children to school, and they reach the school gate, they don't go to school. This is a child that actually, you might say, physically remove her out of servitude. And she was purchased for $25. And Tyler had introduced himself to you. He was in Haiti with me. I wanted him to see that child. Today, she's living with a family. She's no longer a slave. She's no longer a child slave. But these are some of the things that my foundation does in Haiti. That's her right here when she was purchased for $25. And she works from 4 in the morning to 8 at night in a restaurant. Her owner has a restaurant. And she's the one who really fetch the water and get the food going and serve the customers and watch the, and they refuse to send her to school. Can you imagine that? And these are, they have nothing to do with skin color. It has to do with a cultural or a historical nightmare. And that nightmare is still present for these children. Well, last year, about a year and a half ago, I published my second book, And the second book is called My Stone of Hope. And the title is basically, it's because I was inspired by the speech, Martin Luther King's speech, I Have a Dream. And that day at the high school meant so much to me. So I selected the My Stone of Hope because of that speech. In that speech, I Have a Dream, there's a line that says, we will hew out of mountain of despair a stone of hope. So thank you very much for listening. I was told to be done by 10:30, and I wanted to keep my promise. Thank you. I have a few books here for sale, my second book and my first book. They're $20 if you would like to purchase one. The autograph is free. Thank you.
On behalf of Peace Fellowship and EMU, we want to thank you once again for coming and sharing your story today with us. For those who would like to hear more, Jean Robert is speaking at JMU tonight at 6. So if you want more details about that, you can talk to Tyler or check Facebook. And as he said, if you want to stick around and ask him questions, he'll be here for a little while. So thanks once again. Have a great day.